Welcome back to the next episode of Strong, Badass, and Over 50.
Yeah.
A podcast of women supporting women to bring about change and growth while embracing our badass selves and creating an amazing second act. Our goal is to build a community of women and to share our stories of strength, independence, wisdom, and resilience to inspire each other. And you can also find us on our Facebook page and our Instagram page at Strong, Badass, and Over 50.
And that's where we're inspiring each other.
Yes. I am Randy. I'm here with my co-host, Donna.
Hey.
And today we have the opportunity to talk with Jill. Welcome to the show, Jill.
Thanks.
So, Jill.
Hey, Randy. Hey, Donna.
Oh,
hi. Sorry.
No, okay. My bad. Jill, where are you from?
I am from New Jersey, surprisingly.
Oh, the swamps of Jersey.
The swamps of Jersey.
That's right.
That's right.
Yay. The swamps of Jersey.
Are you still in the swamps?
I am not. I currently live outside of Boston.
Oh, okay.
And you've been there for a while, right?
Yeah, I've been there. Been here for about 18 years.
Okay.
And I also lived in Michigan, Colorado, and Maryland.
Okay.
Before coming back to Massachusetts, because I went to college in the area.
Very okay. Nice.
And you don't have to give us an exact number, but roughly how old are you?
It's easy. I don't even have to do the math. I just turned, this year I turned 60.
I can't even believe it. If you guys could see her, you'd think she was 35.
No, I don't believe it.
Yes.
I'll pay you later, Auntie Pam.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
So, Jill, what did you study in school?
So I was always a math and science person. So growing up, I always said, oh, I want to be a mathematician because I just really liked math and solving problems. When I got to college, I wound up double majoring in math and physics. And then I went to grad school in physics.
Wow.
And were there a lot of women in that field at the time that you were doing that?
So there were not, but I did. I went to Wellesley College, which is a women's college. So there were only women as students. But there were, when I graduated, there were three physics majors out of our graduating class. And when I went to grad school at Maryland, Maryland has a very good physics department. There are 300 graduate students, so it's big.
Mm-hmm.
And in my incoming class of 40 people, there were three of us.
Wow.
Okay.
So not a lot.
There were not many. Not right. Not a lot at all.
Mm-hmm. So, Jill, we're roughly the same age. I'm right behind you.
Okay.
Physics was never even on my, I don't even know how you get into physics as a young adult deciding to go to school for that. So what drew you to study physics?
Well, it was funny because I always liked math, as I said. In high school, I had a female physics teacher, and I thought, you know, I really like solving those problems and things. And when I got to college, math was great. But being a math major usually means at some point you stop seeing numbers and you start solving theorems, and it becomes very theoretical. And I wasn't really interested as much in that. I wanted to solve problems that were more concrete. And so in taking physics classes, I just really liked solving those real problems. Even though if you talk to an engineer, and the engineer is going to be like, physics isn't solving real problems. Engineering is solving real problems. But it was more real than math. Let's put it that way.
That sounds like an episode of Big Bang Theory.
I was thinking that.
Right?
That's about exactly what I was
Sheldon
thinking.
Sheldon and Howard fighting about
physics and engineering.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
And just for full transparency, I have known Jill for a very, very long time, and she is extremely humble. So you not only have a graduate degree, but you also have a PhD. Is that correct?
Yes. So I have a PhD and master's in physics. And then For me, graduating college, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I took what for me was the path of least resistance and just decided to apply to grad school. So I went to grad school, got my degrees, and then again, following the natural path, I got a postdoc at a national lab, did that for a couple of years, and then I got a teaching professorship out in Colorado and did that for about 3 years.
Wow.
So do you need to have a PhD to be employed in your industry?
So I recently retired, but in what I was doing,
congratulations.
Prior to retirement. Oh, thank you. Prior to retirement, no, I didn't need a PhD. And in fact, when I made the transition from academia to business, I did not even indicate that I had a PhD. So initially I had to because my resume was very light, right? All I had done was academia. But as I got into the world of technology and the business world, I didn't even, I had my education on there, but I didn't even list that I was a professor or did a postdoc or anything like that. Because in a lot of ways, having a PhD in business can be a hindrance because people have this certain perception of you that, oh, you can't get anything done. You just want to understand why things are the way they are. And, you know, we're a business and we're here to make money.
Mm.
Right. So definitely don't need a PhD to do healthcare IT is what I wound up spending most of my career in.
Gotcha. Now, you had said your first job in after your PhD was as a kind of a professor in Colorado.
Yes. Okay. That's right.
So then after that job, is that when you transitioned into corporate or more business? And what was that job?
So I wound up, I was working very hard. Like I had my whole academic career, but I was not really enjoying myself very much. I enjoyed talking about what I was studying and researching because I could summarize it at a high level. But in reality, you know, in science these days, you're working on a very small part of a very large problem.
Right.
But what I did like to do was the computers and programming and something where I could get some immediate feedback. Like I'm in using more modern language, I'm more of a maker. I like to make things and build things. And so what I did was I took a leave of absence. So I had this ginormous safety net and I went and I tried my hand at software development.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked for, right, so this will age me as well, even though I already told you my age. It was working for MCI before they became WorldCom.
I worked for MCI. I worked for MCI too. I was in their customer service department.
Yeah, so, you know, it was a long time ago. I did user interface software development, and I really liked it. And most of my family were like, oh, she's going to go running back to academia. And I didn't. I never went back. So I just left and started working in programming and computers and software.
Huh.
Wow. Interesting. So let me ask you, why do you think women don't go into STEM?
Well, I think more do today. For sure, right? There are many more young women in science and engineering today. I don't think there are enough, but many more do. I think, you know, there are the old sort of, not necessarily stereotypes, but, you know, in order to succeed, you have to be more aggressive and confident then maybe you're comfortable being, you know, when there are so few women, One thing that I found, especially at the beginning of my career, was in school, at grad school even, you couldn't ever be anonymous. Like, I couldn't sit in a class in graduate school and just sort of sit in the back and not be noticed. Everyone knows you, right? Wow. The professors all know who you are, what your name is. All the students know who you are. So you just have to be able to handle sort of being in the spotlight, even if you don't want it. And that's not for everyone, right? So for people, I think, of our age, you develop sort of this shell, right, if you're going to succeed. So after a while, it just doesn't bother me anymore, right? You get to a certain point of your career, and I'm just like, I don't care anymore. I'm going to tell you the way it is. You know, I can take all these body blows, but I've been there before. Like, I have all these scars, right? So, you know, you can try and knock me down, but it's not going to faze me.
Interesting.
You know, so it's if you know, some people don't care. I think there are a lot of women who, young women might be shy and don't want to be out there, or they might be shy and they really love science. So it doesn't faze them. But, you know, the spotlight is on you. So as opposed to being a man, there are many different types of people who like science and who are good at science.
Right.
So as more and more women, I think, women and girls go into STEM, you see the wide variety of personalities and people that can succeed.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I work for a media company, and I think I mentioned this to you, we work really closely with programs that support women and young women in STEM, because we're looking for our next generation of coders and technologists. Yeah. And we're trying to make it more, equal, for lack of a better word.
Right.
So having said that, there are a lot more young women, as you said, that are going into it now. But when you came into your career, and this would be for both academia and for corporate, did you encounter a lot of sexism when you first came out, and has it gotten better?
So I definitely think it's gotten better. And I didn't encounter a lot of blatant sexism, but I mean, one incident that really affected me was in graduate school. I think it was my first year. And, you know, it's graduate school, you're working at all hours to complete your problem sets, and you have to grade papers if you're a TA. So there were a bunch of us working all together. We're working at the board, and I made a suggestion. And this one student turns to me and says, "What do you know? You're a girl. You don't even belong here."
Oh,
like,
my
right
God.
To my face.
Wow.
But the thing is, everyone was silent at that point and just stared at him. And I was the only woman there, but I was with other friends of mine and people that I worked with. We weren't necessarily friends. And everyone just stared at the guy, and he knew he said something he shouldn't have, and he just ran out of the room.
Really?
But so no one could really believe that he actually said that. So that was really the most blatant thing. But there were other not so outrageous things that happened. Even, you know, I could say within the last year, being in meetings with people, and this is one of the most, I'm sure you've both experienced this, being in a meeting and you're having some sort of discussion and you say something and everyone's like, okay, and then you go to the next person and they say the same exact thing and everyone in the room is like, "That is brilliant.
Uh-huh.
What an amazing idea."
Yes.
And then you're just sitting there saying, "I just said the same thing."
Yes.
Go ahead.
The one who has repeated you usually has a penis.
Yes,
of course.
I would say 99.
Well, there are some. There are some 100 women.
Yeah, percent of the time that happens.
Exactly.
And so I think that's one. So I think today, even leaders at companies, you know, generally people are more aware. They understand that from a business perspective, it's better to have a diverse population, a diverse set of employees, have women in STEM. But just because there are more there doesn't mean they're going to stay.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that you still, the men who even are very supportive still have to think about how they're interacting with you
mm-hmm.
and with other women in the room. Because how could something like that happen today? Right? It happened. It has happened to me, and I was a senior person, and I've seen it happen to young women, you know, where they say something and then the person, you know, the man sitting next to them says the same thing and everyone is falling over themselves to congratulate him.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because they're not paying attention to the woman.
Right.
Right. Right. It's like they're letting her say her piece. Mm-hmm. And now that they've done that, they can get back to the real business.
Right.
Of
right.
listening. Right.
I mean, the only thing that's missing is them not saying, yes, that was cute. Let's move on. Right.
Oh, my God.
Exactly.
That's the, right. That's the subtext. Bubble. Right. That's the subtext.
That's right.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. So do you think there are, well, actually, you already answered this question. There are more women than before when you started. Never mind.
Mm-hmm. No, there are definitely more, but I think the challenges are different today,
okay.
You know, for young women, because it's not necessarily going to be so blatant. And there are more support groups and things. But you know, it would be interesting to, say, talk to some younger women and find out what their challenges are. Because, again, I think that a lot of the men around our age think that they've done their job because now there are more young women coming up the ranks. But there aren't very many women at the top. And it does make a difference if you can't see a path for you and mm-hmm. you don't see any female leaders.
Right. If you don't see somebody who looks like you.
Right.
At the top.
Right.
But totally.
Do you think there are programs in school now for STEM that are encouraging young women to get into science and math?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I think there are lots of programs to do that. There are all sorts of organizations that are encouraging that. There are professional organizations. And I think lots of the big organizations will also have little subgroups. Like one of the organizations I was involved with when I was working is HIMSS. It's a Health Information Management Society. I think I missed an M or an S in there. But in any case, it's healthcare IT folks. And they have like women in science and technology, right? A women in healthcare IT section. And they do and support, they host events and have talks and things at a lot of the conferences. So I think that's pretty standard these days.
Yeah, I think that's right. But to your point from before, if they're just getting in like as an entry-level employee, I think the bigger question we've been talking about in my company is not just getting these young women in the door or with regard to any diverse group, but is there a path for them to grow and lead, right? So
yeah.
Right. So what percentage, and it's just a guesstimate, do you think of people who are working in a science and technology type industry are women?
Oh, it's... I think it's, I'm going to answer the question by not answering the question. it very much depends on the field. So I think in medicine today, for example, it's probably 50% or more are women.
Oh, awesome.
Okay.
In med school.
Right.
Right. There's a high percentage of women in, say the physical sciences, maybe physics, chemistry, and engineering. I still think it's relatively low. somewhere between 10 and 40%. Mm-hmm. So I think it really depends on the field. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know about computer science. I think there are many more women there. And again, the more, you know, there's that critical mass. So the more women you have, the more of anyone of a particular group you have, the easier it is to get more people of that group, mm-hmm, right? Because right. then it's not like everyone is cookie cutter then, mm-hmm. right? So you can find someone, you know, that's like you
right.
there,
right.
That you can bond with and have a relationship with, as opposed to people assuming, oh, well, you are the only two women here, so you must be able to get along, right? You're friends, aren't mm-hmm. you? You're women, right? Mm-hmm.
yeah. And it makes you probably less likely to leave if you do have a connection with other people, right? Because that's right. everything at work is the relationship. So
absolutely.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So you retired this year. What is that
I
like?
I did. It's weird, but it's good.
do you miss being in the workforce?
I miss the people. Right, because I the company I worked for, I had been there for 17 years, so it was a long wow. time.
Yeah.
So, and I had a lot of different roles there, so I knew a lot of people. So I miss the people more than anything. But it was also very high stress, like super high stress. So it took me a number of months to sort of decompress. Like I felt like I was a spring. Like completely stretched out, like Ooh. Think of a slinky, right? All stretched out. And then it took like 3 months for me to sort of relax back into like me, into like normal Jill, as opposed to stressed out work Jill. So it's nice not waking up in the middle of the night trying to solve work problems.
Oh, yeah. you know? So... After being so stressed for 17 years in this position, did you have to find out who this new relaxed Jill was? Is she still the same person she was 17 years ago?
I don't know. I'm definitely not the same person that I was. But it's, you know, it's interesting because I think, I really like technology. So I'm trying to stay current on technology because I find it fun. I'm doing it because I want to, not because right. I have to do it.
It's not a job
but
anymore.
Especially in this country, we're so, our identities are so closely tied to what we do.
Yes.
It's hard. You know, it's hard to separate from that. So I'm still trying to figure out, well, you know, are there interesting volunteer opportunities that resonate with me that I would like to spend time on? I wanted, do some traveling and things, family activities while I'm still relatively young and relatively healthy enough to enjoy doing them as opposed to putting them off, because so many people I know put things off and then they get sick and then it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's
Absolutely.
So true.
Absolutely.
So, Jill, do you have any piece of advice that you would give to a young woman coming up through school today that wants to be in science, technology, engineering, all of that stuff? Like, what kind of advice would you offer to them as their path is just beginning?
I think today it's so there's so many opportunities. And with social media and the internet, right, it's easier to find people with whom you can connect. So I think it's, even if you're not going into STEM, whatever, like if you find it interesting, you should definitely pursue it. And if you pursue it and you're like, maybe this isn't for me, don't be afraid to change. You have your whole career life ahead of you. You're going to spend such a large percentage of your time doing whatever it is you're working at. Try, if at all possible, find something that you really enjoy. and try to connect with other people with similar interests. And you can do it in person now, or there's so many groups, so many forums that you can connect with or investigate to find someone or some organization that is doing something in an area of interest to you. So don't be discouraged. Mm. Right? Even if people are saying you can't do that, you can't do it.
Right. There's a lot.
There's a lot of that always. That mm-hmm. will always happen. Or, you shouldn't. Right. That's not going to pan out. That's not going to turn into anything. You know, don't do that. You should try. Mm-hmm. Right? Right. You have your whole life ahead of you. Try to find something that you like. And if you picked wrong, just pick something else. Mm-hmm. There's no harm, no foul in making a career change.
100%. I mean, that. I think that's great advice.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jill, for sharing your wisdom with us. That is all the time that we have for today.
This podcast is about supporting women over 50. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you have something you'd like to share, or a topic you'd like to discuss, please reach out to us at strongbadassandover50@gmail.com. Also, connect with us on our Facebook group, on our Instagram page, again, Strong Badass and Over 50, and we are streaming on all of the platforms.
And we are sponsored by Donna J. Wellness, integrative health coaching designed to take the misery and overwhelm out of your menopause journey. Sign up for a free consultation today at www.donnajwellness.com. And we are out from the swamps of Jersey.
Bye-bye.
Bye.